Tomorrow night, our weekly flashback to some of baseball's most unforgettable games continues. Game 7 of the 2003 ALCS Red Sox-Yankees. If you're in Boston, you might want to turn it off when Aaron Boone comes up. 7 Eastern on ESPN and on the ESPN app. Meanwhile, give me Swagoo. Hey, Marcus, did you see Cliff Kingsbury's Arizona home? It was the talk of the virtual draft on Thursday night. And one fan was inspired enough by it to recreate it using Legos. What are your thoughts?
I love it, G. That's sweet. I got a young kid, too, so I know what the Legos are all about. Listen, Ryan told y'all it was a thirst trap. People are going to create this house. The one thing I will say about this, G, my wife stopped in her tracks when they were showing Cliff Kingsbury house and locked in on the NFL draft. So even she know who the hell the Arizona Cardinals took in the draft.
That's absolutely right. Yes, that man is both handsome and has the coolest looking house I've ever seen in my entire life. We, meanwhile, have a spectacular hour coming your way, and it starts right now because it is time to get up with the bad boys and the bad man. Michael fires on the Pistons after all these years. Isaiah Thomas will respond live in 30 minutes. Meanwhile, the Eagles pull a surprise early in the draft. Made a lot of sense in a way I would never have considered. You'll hear it, and you can make up your own mind. Plus, Marcus and Dan will name the biggest winners and biggest mistakes of the NFL draft as we get up with you, starting right now. Let me get up and go because the draft ended Saturday, but the Saints were really busy yesterday. First of all, they and free agent quarterback Jameis Winston are close to finalizing the one-year contract. He will essentially be replacing Teddy Bridgewater in New Orleans. It's a move everyone on our crew loves for both sides. Saints also yesterday signed quarterback Taysom Hill to a two-year $21 million deal. It includes $16 million fully guaranteed. So he is in-house regardless of what happens with Jameis. As far as the NBA, starting on Friday, the league will begin reopening team practice facilities for individual player workouts in states that are loosening stay-at-home restrictions. Teams will remain prohibited from holding group workouts or organizations' team activities. Then we get to episodes 3 and 4 last night of Last Dance. One of the moments from Michael Jordan's career from last night that everyone is talking about, the infamous Pistons walk-off after being swept by MJ and the Bulls in the 91 Eastern Conference Finals. Bill Laimbeer talked about it with Rachel Nichols. Here's what Laimbeer says all these years later.
Whined and cried for a year and a half about how bad we were for the game. But more importantly, they said we're bad people. We weren't bad people. We were just basketball players winning. And that kind of stuck with me because they didn't know who we were or what we were about as individuals in our family life. So all that whining they did, why shake their hand? They were just whiners. They won the series. Give them credit. We got old. They got past us. But, okay, move on.
Do you regret now not shaking their hand? Do you stand by that?
No. Why would I regret now today? I don't care what the media says about them. I never did. If I did, I'd be a basket case, especially back then. I was about winning basketball games and winning championships and did whatever I had to do to get the most out of my ability and our team. And we did. At the end of the day, we're called world champions.
I mentioned Isaiah Thomas is going to be live here in a half hour to respond to this. If you saw it last night, you saw Michael has not gotten past it. He says, whatever Isaiah says now, you know, it wasn't his true actions then. You know, there's time enough to think about it or the reaction of the public that's changed his perspective. You can show me anything you want. There's no way you can convince me he wasn't, and you can fill in the final word if you saw it. You also might have seen the choice of words Horace Grant uses all these years later to describe those Pistons. So here they are, the pride of Detroit, Jalen Rose, and my man Stephen A. Smith is an hour away from the start of First Take. Steve, I know where Jalen's going to go, but Steve, I don't know where you're going to go. So let me start with you. When you saw Michael say what he said last night all these years later, what do you think?
It didn't bother me at all. He was telling his true feelings at that particular moment in time. And, you know, I know a lot of people are put off about it, and they allude to his relationship with Isaiah Thomas or lack thereof. But I explained this to a lot of people. One has nothing to do with the other. Please understand that Michael Jordan is telling you how he felt about that particular moment at that particular time. It's not that he gives a damn about it now and he's losing any sleep over it now. It's about back then. And it's interesting that you have me on this segment with Jalen Rose, because I'd like to bring this up. And it's not to knock Jalen Rose. It's to support him. when Jalen Rose did that absolutely phenomenal documentary on the Fab Five and the University of Michigan, and he talked about how they felt about Grant Hill at that particular moment in time. When Jalen Rose was insulted, I came to his defense to everybody, including Grant Hill, because I said he was telling you what the feeling was about Grant Hill being at Duke at that particular moment in time. He's not talking about 20, 25 years later. He's talking about at that particular moment in time, he's giving you insight into the kind of thinking and the kind of mentality that had engulfed them as players competing against him. And I think that Michael Jordan was doing the same thing here. He's telling you at that particular moment in time, this is how we felt about Isaiah Thomas and Bill Laimbeer and all of those guys. They didn't give a damn because the day before Michael Jordan had, you know, basically called them bad champions, bad for basketball, etc. And they were really put off and offended by Michael Jordan's words about them. Michael Jordan hated them at the time, admittedly so, and that was that.
I think he still hates them now. Jalen, what do you think?
I'm glad Stephen A. brought that up. Good morning, guys. And I want to teleport those that were alive at this time back to the late 80s and the early 90s. There were a couple of things in sports that were breaking glass ceilings. Number one, the argument about amateurism in the NCAA. And the Fab Five was first and foremost of that fight, taking on the baton for people who started before us like John Thompson and UNLV and Syracuse and some of those great squads. The other thing that was at play was that NBA players were trying to figure out, in particular, if they were actually embracing being role models or not. Dennis Rodman was like one of the first athletes that became what was considered a rock star. He was like a Chuck Berry, like a Jimi Hendrix almost, an eclectic person, a lot of tattoos, a lot of piercings. Can tell that, you know, he probably did a lot of drugs and did a lot of partying, but yet he was a champion. He was a very smart player, and he showed up when his team needed him the most. So what is a rival, okay? This is something that so many sports fans claim that they really want in the game, but they don't really know what they're asking for, Stephen A., and here's why. Because when you have a rival, that's a level of disdain that goes beyond the score of the game. See, right now, there's no physical intimidation in the game. You can drive to the basket. The first foul is a flagrant. The second time, you eject it from the game. When physical intimidation was a part of the game, that was a whole different level of dislike, because not only am I trying to beat you mentally, but I'm brutalizing you physically to the point where the first guy, Laimbeer, foul you, and then the second guy, Mahorn, to come and just knock you down. And Michael Jordan knew he had to get into the weight room. And this was his only rival. Our Detroit Pistons beat them 3 straight years in the playoffs. And Detroit area was on fire at the time. Michigan won the championship in 89. Desmond Howard had won the Heisman Trophy from the University of Michigan. We were winning championships in high school. And the Pistons were the first squad to have a plane for their team and to try to set up great accommodations. That was like a diss to the Bulls in a lot of ways, because their organization was looked at as one that didn't take care of its players. So finally, when that era ended with the owner, Mr. D, and Trader Jack, you had to walk past their bench anyway to go to the locker room. If you look back in the history of the league, there are so many teams and players that left the court without shaking hands.
Wait.
They just didn't have to walk past the other team to do so.
Fair enough. And all of that is true. But Stephen A., I want to ask you a direct question, because we got to go back to what happened last night. Horace Grant said the Pistons were a bunch of straight up, and then a word I can't use, but it starts with the letter B. Was he right?
Well, I don't feel he was. I don't feel he was about that, because, again, if Michael Jordan hadn't said what he had said the day before, I don't know if the Pistons would have done that. If that's they didn't do it because they lost. They did it because they had been reigning 2-time back-to-back champions, going for a third. Nobody had three-peated at the time. And Michael Jordan said what he said. Now, Michael Jordan had every right to say what he said because of what they had put him through and some of the tactics that they had employed. But I'm going to tell you the biggest reasons that I think that the Pistons are getting a bad rap about walking off the court. When you bring up the fact that the Boston Celtics walked off the court when Isaiah Thomas and the Pistons had beaten them. Remember, Isaiah Thomas highlights that Adrian Dantley was at the free throw line. He had stopped Kevin McHale, who was going to walk off, but he had talked to Isaiah and nobody else. But Larry Bird walked off the court. Dennis Johnson walked off the court, along with others. And Larry Bird obviously was deified. The fact that he was white didn't hurt. And him walking off the court, it's one thing to not even be vilified by it. It's another thing entirely for Larry Bird to barely even be asked about walking off the court while the game was still going on. So we have to understand that what happened and the way that at the Pistons were excoriated, it's because Michael Jordan was class personified. He was the greatest player in the world. He was ascending. And how dare the Pistons act this way? I'm saying the standard ain't consistent. If you're gonna vilify the Pistons for doing it, how come you never vilified Larry Bird and the Boston Celtics for doing it?
Jalen.
That's a good legitimate question in my mind.
And also, just think about what the Pistons were trying to conquer in this day. You're overcoming two of the greatest franchises that the league has seen in the Lakers led by Magic Johnson and the Celtics led by Larry Bird and the Jordan-led Bulls. So the Pistons, as they continue to ascend, Greeny, as you know and as you remember, it's hard to oppose what the public adores. And who's more loved than Michael Jordan, Magic Johnson, and Larry Bird in the history of the league? You can put those guys up there with anybody. And then all of a sudden, if these guys from Detroit have the nerve to be bad boys and up in the apple cart and try to hurt what we perceive as the future star of the league. And so when you finally beat that team, this same Isaiah Thomas that was also that summer left off the dream team.
Yep.
We ain't gonna even talk about why Christian Leitner made it over Shaq. But I just want to talk about the fact that Isaiah Thomas was left off of the dream team.
Listen, one of the greatest crimes, one of the greatest crimes, and I'm going to say this, one of the greatest crimes in the history of basketball is that the original Dream Team did not include Isaiah Thomas. We love John Stockton. John Stockton is great, and we understand that Hall of Famer, Isaiah Thomas introduced him into the Hall of Fame, if I remember correctly, but there is no way in hell that Isaiah Thomas deserved to be off that team. He was off that team because his reputation had been sullied in large part because of his relationship with Michael Jordan. But it's a damn shame that that happened. That's a crime.
But that goes
a crime.
That goes back to what I was saying. That's what happens when you try to oppose all-time greatness. The public doesn't like you. The media doesn't like you. There still isn't a more popular player than Air Jordan. There isn't a second most popular player than Magic Johnson.
Yep.
And obviously Larry Bird was adored to the point their 1979 championship game is still the most watched NCAA game of all time. So this is what the Pistons were trying to oppose and look to overcome. And there's going to be some toes you have to step on in the process. And our bad boys were willing to do it as back-to-back champions.
Again,
Isaiah Thomas has a winning record against all three of those all-time greats.
And Isaiah's coming up live here.
Exactly.
Stephen A., I got 30 seconds. Final word. Go.
Well, my final word is this. The only thing that I'm saying is it's not like we talk about Jed Bushler or somebody. This is Isaiah Thomas, a two-time champion, a national champion in college, one of the top 50 players of all time that he was named. This guy was a champion in and of himself. So when we talk about Magic, Bird, and Jordan, we're also talking about somebody in Isaiah Thomas that, as a miniature guard, deserves some similar accolades as well. And I think people forget this dude is one of the greatest players to have ever played the game of basketball. His damn self.
For sure. He's coming up live. Jalen, you'll be with us. So it'll be Jalen and Isaiah will be here live in about 17 minutes. So we hope that you'll stay with us. For that, Stephen A., we'll see you on First Take. Thank you.
Bad
Meanwhile,
boys.
Coming up here, as we heard a few minutes ago, Michael has not forgiven Isaiah and the Pistons. What did Isaiah think of what was said last night? Again, his first interview will be live here coming up shortly on Get Up. And then it was a pick that seemed head-scratching when you have Carson Wentz. But does the Eagles taking Jalen Hurts make more sense than it seemed? We'll answer that question next. Get Up on ESPN.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So, at GEICO, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now, it's our turn to share with the GEICO Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
Foot odor throwing you off your game? Stick to a winning game plan with Odor Eaters, featuring three advanced odor and wetness fighters. The lineup provides long-lasting odor control plus more to keep your feet on their game.
Odor Eaters powder provides outstanding moisture control. Clear drying spray is the MVP in preventing athlete's foot, while insoles work continuously to manage wetness while adding a layer of comfort. Pick up today at Walmart, Target, CVS, Dollar General, or other fine retailers.
Odor Eaters. Destroy foot odor with the best in odor defense.
We are back on Get Up. The draft is behind us. Mel Kiper, as always, was the star of all the action. And we got some questions. Mel, who had the best draft?
Green, but you think about it, Greeny, the Baltimore Ravens, no question about it. They had the best draft. J.K. Dobbins, get him the second round, a running back who helped out, obviously, Mark Ingram. We saw when Ingram was banged up, playoff game, what happened. And then he gets five offensive and five defensive players. Devin Duvernay, certainly a wide receiver, slot receiver with great speed, and James Prochet from SMU. And the offensive line was helped, and the defensive side of the ball as well.
Mel, what was the biggest surprise to you?
Green Bay. Green, not taking a wide receiver. I think you look at Devontae Adams. It was all Adams, nobody else at wide receiver. And he missed four games, yet he was at 83 catches. Next was at 35. No wide receiver in the seventh round, a safety and a defensive end. No wide out for Aaron Rodgers.
And then finally, give us one perfect fit from this weekend.
I'd say it's Jacob Eason in the fourth round to the Colts. You have Phillip Rivers for a year or two. You have Jacob Eason, who needs time to round things off, learn the nuances of playing that position. He's got the rocket arm, imposing size, and he could maybe be the heir apparent to Phillip Rivers.
It's a fascinating pick, and he's someone that we can certainly talk more about as we go. But I want to talk about a different quarterback who was drafted this weekend. The Eagles, maybe the biggest surprise of the second round Friday night, passing on a variety of other needs to take Oklahoma's Jalen Hurts with the 53rd pick. This after Philly handed Carson Wentz a four-year, $128 million contract extension less than a calendar year ago. Mel, what was your reaction to the Eagles taking Hurts?
I think it made perfect sense. Think about a creative guy like Doug Peterson. Hurts you can utilize in a lot of ways. Jim Nagy even made a point about it early on. He thought, am I going to bring Hurts here as a running back? He can do so many things. You saw what Lamar Jackson did with Flacco as a rookie before he became the starter. Now you give defensive coordinators so much to think about with Carson Wentz, and then knowing Jalen Hurts is going to be utilized in a variety of ways with those packages they can put in for him. And Carson Wentz has been injury prone. Now you get a guy who could come in if Wentz gets hurt and maybe do a good job for you once he obviously gets some experience in the NFL. I think it's a heck of a move on all levels for the Philadelphia Eagles.
Generally speaking, Mel, do evaluators around the league consider him a future starting quarterback?
Some do, some don't. Green, it was mixed opinion, but I always said one thing we know for sure, he can run those RPOs. He can do what Lamar Jackson did before Lamar Jackson became an outstanding quarterback. And if that's all he does, and he's a solid backup, and remember, he's loyal, he's been in this role with Tua, he's not going to create any issues, he's going to be the perfect backup to Carson Wentz.
All right, I happen to have Carson's personal spokesman here, and that's Dan Orlovsky. Dan, let me come to you on this here. Dan and Marcus with me all morning. What did you think of the Eagles taking Hurts?
Yeah, so initially I don't agree with the pick. And then my job is to figure out why, right? And to really take a deep dive into it. And as I started to think about it, one, the Eagles obviously wanted to upgrade their backup quarterback position. And they did that. And to be honest with you, Greeny, it's justifiable. And over the last 3 years, it's 100% justifiable seeing the season end with a Carson Wentz injury. It'd be ignorant not to think that way. And then two, is there a way that you can upgrade your backup position, but also continue to develop that quarterback and use him on your roster, right? And so Jalen Hurts is that guy where you can have him as your backup quarterback and develop him, but you can use him 10 or 12 plays a game where you hand the ball off to him or jet sweep it to him or use him in a plus one run game. Imagine him and Carson Wentz on the field at the same time. I mean, imagine catching a shotgun snap, Jalen Hurts coming across running an RPO, handing the ball off, Hurts running to the sideline with a threat as a runner and then a pass concept behind it. I mean, there's a lot of creativity you can get with that. And the reality is this. Now that you've added Jalen Hurts, You have 53 guys on your roster, but because of him, and if you use him the right way, you have 54. You have an extra body on game day. Instead of dressing 48, it's like dressing 49. And so if the Eagles use him this way, which would be the right way, then the pick makes a lot of sense. Now, if he's just going to stand there on game days, then this pick makes no sense and it doesn't help the football team right now.
Marcus, let me come to you on this because, I mean, Jalen Hurts, of course, one of the most famous college football players in recent memory with all that he did at Alabama, and you were there to chronicle all that. Then he goes to Oklahoma and has a borderline Heisman kind of season. So let me ask you, what do you think is Jalen Hurts' long-term future as a quarterback in the NFL?
Jalen Hurts' long-term future, I compare a lot to possibly Tyrod Taylor's and him getting better as time goes along. Jalen Hurts, to me, man, made a progression and a jump as a passer. Is he the greatest passer to throw the ball downfield? No, but he's shown the propensity to get better every single year. He got better at Alabama when people said he couldn't push the ball downfield. Obviously, Tua came in, one of the generational quarterbacks that we've seen. Transfers, goes, plays for Lincoln Riley. Lincoln Riley puts him in an offense, gives him an opportunity to push the ball downfield, does a good job there. Second round draft pick. But more so than that, I want to focus on what Mel said about Jalen Hurts, because being in a locker room for so long and playing this game, guys' makeup matters. And when I say makeup, what is their psychological makeup as football players? There is not a better player. You can look over the college landscape that you would feel confident in at being ready if his name is called and making sure that he's ingrained in everything that the team is doing and is on board with what the team is doing. Philly got a steal of a football player that could continue to develop into possibly being a starter in this league one day. I love the draft pick that Philly made with Jalen Hurts.
Yeah, the way that Jalen Hurts handled that whole situation at Alabama, I think, drew him universal respect. It'll be interesting to see what he does from here. Meanwhile, as we continue tonight on ESPN, our look back at some of the greatest Monday night football games continues. You're going to see week 5 from the 2007 season when Tony Romo led a frantic Cowboys last-minute rally in Buffalo. That's tonight, 8 Eastern on ESPN and the ESPN app. All right, coming up next, we've been looking forward to this all morning long. Michael Jordan strongly left no doubt where he stands regarding Isaiah and the Bad Boy Pistons last night. Isaiah Thomas will join us live next here. Get up, ESPN.
Geico gets you access to licensed agents 24/7, which means that Geico is always there for you. If only everyone was always there for you, like your mom when you fill out really, really important paperwork on the first day of a new job.
Name, check. Birthday, Social Security, is that a thing? Hey, mom, what is my Social Security number? Mom? Okay, let's guess. 0017. Oh, Gemini. Hashtag done.
Geico, always there for you with savings and 24/7 access to licensed agents.
Well, I think the crowd is cheering here for the Bulls right now, and the Pistons as they leave the court.
I don't think they're cheering for the Bulls, but I think the greeting is for the Pistons as they are headed off as time runs down. Pistons wasting no time in getting out of here. They left the bench, although there's 7 and 9/10 seconds remaining. The Pistons just left.
You saw it last night on Last Dance. The best thing about rivalries is that 29 years later, they're still not over. Those were the Pistons refusing to shake the Bulls' hands as they walked off the floor. Last night, Bill Laimbeer with Rachel Nichols. His thoughts all these years later.
Whined and cried for a year and a half about how bad we were for the game. But more importantly, they said we're bad people. We weren't bad people. We were just basketball players winning. And that kind of stuck with me because they didn't know who we were or what we were about as individuals in our family life. So all that whining they did, why shake their hand? They were just whiners. They won the series. Give them credit. We got old. They got past us, but okay, move on.
Do you regret now not shaking their hand? Do you stand by that?
No. Why would I regret now today? I don't care what the media says about them. I never did. If I did, I'd be a basket case, especially back then. I was about winning basketball games and winning championships and did whatever I had to do to get the most out of my ability and our team. And we did. At the end of the day, we're called world champions.
So that's an interview Bill Laimbeer did with Rachel Nichols. It'll air in its entirety on The Jump today. Meanwhile, Isaiah Thomas is going to join us in a second. We're getting that hooked up technically. Jalen Rose is obviously ready for a man that you grew up idolizing, and I know that well. It was a fascinating night last night, and I'm told Isaiah is ready to go. So the thing, we were always happy to have Isaiah Thomas on the program, but what we specifically wanted was to give you the chance to respond to what Michael said. So for those of you who saw it last night, you saw it. Michael Jordan on that moment last night on Last Dance said whatever Isaiah says now, you know it wasn't his true actions then. You know there's time enough to think about it or the reaction of the public that's changed his perspective. You can show me anything you want. There's no way you can convince me he wasn't a blank. And I'm not allowed to say the word on TV. Again, the best thing about rivalries is that 30 years later, they're still not over. Here's the Hall of Famer Isaiah Thomas. We wanted to give you a chance to respond. Isaiah, what did you think?
Well, first of all, let me just say this. I speak for kind of three things here. I speak for the city of Detroit. I speak for the Detroit Pistons. And then I also speak for myself. So watching the documentary, I think it's interesting. It's fun. It's entertaining right now. And I think the sports world needs it. In terms of how we felt at that particular times as champions, we were coming down, Michael Jordan was coming up. And in coming up, you have certain emotions. And in coming down as champions, you have certain emotions. And I've said this many a times. Looking back over the years, had we had the opportunity to do it all over again, I think all of us would make a different decision. Now, me, myself personally, I paid a heavy price for that decision. And in paying that price, you know, I understand that this is the sports world and everything else, but at the same time, looking back over it in terms of how we felt at that particular time, our emotional state, and how we exited the floor, we actually gave the world the opportunity to look at us in a way that we never really tried to position ourselves in or project ourselves in that way. So it's unfortunate that it happened, but you know that's just how it was during that period of time.
Zeke, I'm going to turn you over to Jalen in a second, but I wanted to ask just one more thing, because it was always my perception as one who covered the league at that time that your team, your group thrived on the image of being the bad boys, that you there were some athletes who love that disrespect and love to be hated by the fans, and it motivates them. How would you describe the way you felt then and feel now about having been the bad boys?
You know, it's just interesting looking back over that era, Greeny, because, you know, when I came into the league, and I really have to contextualize this for everyone watching, because when I came into the league, the Philadelphia 76ers and Dr. J were the champions. And then Boston became the champions. And during the period of the 80s, it was Philadelphia, Boston, LA, and Detroit. Those were the four champions. And, you know, when we talk about, you know, only Boston and LA, that's not accurate. There was the 76ers. There was Boston, there was L.A., and then there was Detroit. And at that particular time, we had a chance to do something that none of those franchises had ever done. We had a chance to three-peat. And we were going for our three-peat in 91. And really, it could have been our four-peat, because in 88, we you know, technically, we could have won that game too. But, you know, we didn't. So going for that three-peat, for us, emotionally, it was, you know, it was draining, but it was also disappointing at that time to lose. And I remember when we played Boston and, you know, when Boston exited the floor. And I remember, you know, going back in our locker room and we're celebrating and everything else. And, you know, for us, it was okay when Boston exited. It was okay when Larry Bird exited. We never looked back and said, oh, they were poor sports, they were bad champions. We were actually grateful of the lessons that they had taught us along the way in terms of how to win, how to become a good team, how to be a solid franchise, how to have rules, how to have regulations, how to be disciplined enough to go out and to compete every single night to earn and win a championship. That's what the Boston Celtics taught us. That's what the Los Angeles Lakers taught us. That's what we learned from Philadelphia. So the moment in time that we're talking about here, we've never asked for an apology from the Boston Celtics. And I don't believe the Boston Celtics ever asked for an apology from the Los Angeles Lakers. I don't believe the Lakers ever asked for an apology from the Philadelphia 76ers. You know, those were the times. Unfortunately, there was a time period that changed, and we may have got caught in the middle of that time period.
Go ahead, Jalen.
A few things. Isaiah, you know how much I love you, the Detroit Pistons, my hometown, and those Bad Boys teams. Can you contextualize for the audience what it's like to try to oppose what everyone so very beloves? And you talk about the lessons that you had to overcome based on the fact that you guys walked off without shaking the Bulls' hands. But as a basketball player and as a Detroit native, y'all were putting on for the city. And I saw y'all had to overcome some Mount Rushmore of obstacles. And when today's fan sees LeBron James, I'll also ask them to think about this. He's not more beloved overall than Michael Jordan, Magic Johnson, or Larry Bird. So what was it like to compete against those opposing forces and be disliked just for the fact that you had the nerve to even beat them?
That was a difficult time for all of us, and our journey hasn't thoroughly been told. We trying to beat the Lakers at that time, trying to beat the Celtics at that time. You know, when we beat Chicago in '88, Jordan was the MVP of the league. When we beat the Lakers in '89, Magic was the MVP of the league. Magic was the MVP of the league in '89 and '90. When Magic was MVP of the league in '90, he did not make it to the NBA Finals. We actually beat Portland. Bird, I believe, was the MVP of the league in '86, and Magic again in '87. So those were the three MVPs of the league during my time, and having to beat all three of them, and how they were beloved and how they were looked at. And also the city of Detroit, what we were going through at that time. We were always, not only as a basketball team, looked at as the underdog, but the city itself was looked at as an underdog. Now, this is where it becomes truly problematic, because the language that was being used around the Detroit Pistons, and I think this language hurt everyone, but more importantly, this language I think really hurt Bill Laimbeer. Because the racialized language that was used around the Pistons of description in terms of calling us thugs, saying we were bad for basketball, saying that we didn't earn or deserve the championships that we had fought so hard to win. And I don't think Laimbeer has ever been called a thug in his life. But going through all of that and still rising to the top, and still having high standards for yourself, and still having the discipline to go out and compete and to work. You know, I watched this, you know, it's fascinating to me because I'm getting an inside peek at the rival of the Chicago Bulls that, you know, we didn't see behind the curtains. The problems that they had and the disrespect that they had for Jerry Krause, their president and general manager. If we would have treated Jack McCloskey that way in Detroit, it would have been a problem. You know, Jordan is in the Chicago Bulls. They're rewarded for lifting weights, getting stronger, becoming mentally tougher. That's what you're supposed to do to win a championship. You were not going to beat the Detroit Pistons if you wasn't physically fit, if you wasn't in the best shape of your life, and if you wasn't mentally tough. And Chicago and Michael Jordan did and became all of those things. But while they were losing to us, they weren't those things. Now, you shouldn't be rewarded for lifting weights. I mean, we got high school kids now lifting weights.
Right.
I mean, being physically fit and wanting to be in shape and get better, that's part of becoming a champion. And again, to Chicago's credit, they did that.
Isaiah, hang on one second. I'm obligated to take a commercial break. I hate to ask you this live on the air. Can you come back in 4 minutes? Okay,
yeah,
stay with me. Jalen, can you come back in 4 minutes? Because there's a very important question. One very, very important question that we did not get the chance to ask that we will do in a moment. Isaiah Thomas and Jalen coming back in just a moment. Plus, at the end of the show, we'll also get back to the football and the draft. Dak Prescott and the Cowboys got better. We'll tell you why Dan Orlovsky says Dallas walks away as the biggest winner of the weekend. All that is next. Get up on ESPN.
Though we're apart these days, we're sharing more. So, at GEICO, we'd like to say thanks. Thanks for sharing your savage dance moves. Thanks for sharing your DIY haircut fails. Thanks for sharing your inner lip sync star. Now, it's our turn to share with the GEICO Give Back, a 15% credit on car and motorcycle policies for current and new customers. Because we're committed for the long haul, the 15% credit lasts your full policy term. Visit geico.com/giveback for more info and eligibility.
We are back on Get Up this morning after episodes 3 and 4 of Last Dance aired last night here on ESPN. And the spotlight, particularly in episode 4, was on the legendary rivalry between the Bulls and the Pistons. And it culminated in that moment that we've been discussing here with the great Isaiah Thomas, the Hall of Famer, good enough to stay with us. Thank you, Isaiah, for doing that. And Jalen with us here as well. And Isaiah, I just wanted to ask you about one thing you mentioned at the beginning. You said for that moment, for walking off the floor as you guys did, that you feel you've paid a significant price in your life. What did you mean by that?
Well, you know, as Jalen sits here with his Detroit shirt on, representing, you know, Detroit proudly. You know, I represented Detroit in the west side of Chicago where I came from. And, you know, the fact that I have to sit here today and Jalen, Chris Webber, Steve Smith, who I work with, the hurt that those guys feel for me having to be in this moment, I apologize to them in Detroit for all of us in this moment. Because as a leader of the team and as a leader of that community, why I'm personally hurt is another reason why I'm here. Because being left off the dream team, that personally hurt me. In 1980, I was on the Olympic team. As a matter of fact, I was voted the male athlete of the year in 1980 for the USA Olympic team. And, you know, the only thing that's missing from my resume is not being on the dream team. Now, when the dream team was selected and I wasn't a part of it, there was a lot of controversy around it. And I still don't know, you know, who did it or why they say I didn't make it. I know the criteria for selection of making a team, I had fit all the criteria. And that's a big hole in my resume. That is the biggest hole in my resume. That is the only place, and that's the only thing on my resume that I did not succeed at. You know, I graduated from college. I got a master's degree in education from the University of California at Berkeley. On the educational side, I've succeeded. In the sports arena, you know, I've won at every level. And, you know, I tried to do everything correctly, and I thought I should have made that dream team. However, I wasn't a part of it. That hurt me. And looking back, if I'm not a part of the dream team because, you know, a lapse in emotion in terms of not shaking someone's hand, if that's the reason why I didn't make the dream team, then I am more disappointed today than I was back then when I wasn't selected.
Isaiah, you're a legend. You're an idol. And I appreciate your humility and being willing to apologize to the city of Detroit and so many people that are fans of the team and yours. But you owe us no apology. You put on for us like no other. I saw you out there with a busted ankle, hobbling around, giving us buckets, giving your life. I saw you drive to the basket and suffer a ferocious elbow from Karl Malone that busted your eye open and had you out there looking like a boxer. And you still
can you say that again? Wait, can you? Because this generation thinks that the only one who was getting hit back then was Jordan. And Greeny, you covered a lot of those teams.
Sure.
I can say on this television station here today, there is no player during that period of time that got hit and punished more than myself. And I have all the scars to prove it.
Correct. And that's why I brought that part up, Greeny. And another thing about him being left off the Dream Team, they took our head coach, Chuck Daly. We had just won back-to-back championships. They took our head coach and left our NCAA champion, NBA champion player off of the squad. And lastly, I have to say this. Here's another thing that his legacy suffers from, and this is what pains me. When we start really highlighting who are like the top 15 or 15 players to ever play in the NBA, y'all need to start putting some respect on Isaiah Thomas' name. And the little guard conversation, that boat has sailed. I love Steph Curry. I love Allen Iverson. I love those guys. But Isaiah Thomas had to go against Magic, Jordan, Bird, and we sleep on the Cavs. They were really good with Mark Price as well, and you brought up the Sixers. So for all of those war wounds that you put on for the city of Detroit, you're an educated man, you're a disciplined man. I appreciate your humility after watching last night's documentary.
Thank you. And Greeny, you guys, y'all had a poll up, earlier, I think with Brian when he was on.
Yeah.
And you asked them who was the last team to defeat an opponent after losing to him three consecutive years.
Yes.
And that was the New York Knicks. Now, this is the interesting thing to me. After the Detroit Pistons, the Knicks took on the Pistons' bad boy identity. The Miami Heat took on the bad boy's identity. And there were a lot of teams that took on our defensive identity, our offensive philosophies, and everything around the sport that we brought into the sport. You can trace it back to one team, and that is the Detroit Pistons. Bill Laimbeer set the record in the Portland series. I think he made five consecutive threes. And at that time, Greeny, a center shooting from the three-point line was unheard of, mm-hmm. right?
Yes.
I still hold the record for the highest field goal percentage in that Portland series in the NBA Finals. I think I shot like 68, 69% from the three-point line. We were a team that played outside in. Now every team has a center that shoots a three. Every team has a little point guard that, you know, and has three guards. I mean, so the influence that we've had over the league over the years has been astronomical. However, everybody could play like the Pistons. But the Pistons.
I have to leave it here because the show is literally going to end. Isaiah, I'm told you're going to be on First Take later today. I can't tell you how much we all appreciate you doing this. Thank you very much. Jalen, we love you. We will be back in a moment here.
Thank you. Coming up,
Michael Jordan may still hate the Pistons all these years later. Were they the team he needed to beat to become a legend? Stephen A. and Max will discuss that and more. First Take is coming up in moments on ESPN. All right, we are back, and again, we have the rest of our lives to talk about football. That interview was remarkable. Isaiah Thomas in a very, very frank and honest and emotional conversation with Jalen and me here, talking about Last Dance and the criticism aimed in his direction by the Bulls last night, particularly Michael Jordan. And Dan and Marcus, again, we were going to talk about the draft, but you were both watching. I just want to hear your—go ahead, Marcus, go.
Man, listen, first of all, I know that I've heard so many stories about how great Michael Jordan was, the star ushered in a new wave in the NBA. But, gee, what I got from Zeke Isaiah Thomas just now, that we should probably interview players around during that time more to find out what the response was to Michael Jordan. It's the first time I've like saw a player of that generation in that era with the stature that Isaiah Thomas had talk about. I felt a little bit of animosity towards Michael Jordan. I felt like it was this, they wanted the prodigal son to be Michael Jordan. The NBA wanted to prop Michael Jordan up and make him a superstar. Now, that's not to discredit MJ, obviously. But what I'm saying is getting that perspective from guys before him, not talking about the basketball stature, talking about the personal feelings towards him and things that the Bulls and the Pistons and all of that. I'm just fascinated, man.
Go ahead, Danny.
I don't feel like they like each other. I feel like they have genuine, to this day, dislike to each other. And I just feel like they're still stuck in that moment. I mean, Isaiah certainly sounds like he's still stuck in that moment that it happened. And Michael Jordan the same, because his reaction. Remember, leading into the documentary, Jordan was like, man, some people are going to see me in a light that I don't necessarily want them to. It just takes me to this kind of exchange right now. It was an incredible interview. And it kind of shows you that time doesn't heal all wounds, man.
Well, listen, my thanks to Isaiah Thomas for doing that and for being willing to come on here and to be that honest and to be that open about his emotions all these years later. He's going to be on First Take as our morning continues, so there'll be more of that. I'm grateful to everybody for getting up with us today. We'll see you same place, same time tomorrow. First Take starts now.